Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening. Hit that like button, leave a positive comment, or hit subscribe to get alerted when new episodes drop. All of this will help keep the project going. Thank you for your support and enjoy the episode. This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And my guest today is Michelle Bendekovic, who is a talent DEI specialist and also recently named by the Nashville Business Journal as a woman of influence. So we are thrilled to have her on our show today. Welcome, Michelle.
Lauren, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here and to be included in this incredible group of women that you have gathered in your podcasts. I listened to each one and took a nugget from each one as well. It was fantastic.
Well, I'm really excited to have you here. I'm excited for you to share words of wisdom and your story with the audience. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. Let's start present day and then we'll go backwards. If you were to just give a quick summary about the type of work that you've done, let's say in the past 5 years, how would you sum that up?
Sure. For the past 5 years, I've been working in a large law firm here in Nashville, working in the DE&I space exclusively. So really looking at diversity, equity, and inclusion strategically in the legal setting, looking at our strategic plan, making sure that that was implemented and executed, and that all of the initiatives that we did rolled up into that plan. So it was really immersing myself in that DE&I space within the legal industry.
Fantastic. And it is such an important topic, an important part of any organization. And so I'm excited to learn your journey and just how you kind of got into that line of work. And I know that you're also involved in a lot of nonprofit work as well. So let's go back. Let's talk about Michelle when she was little Michelle. Where just a little bit of background for the audience. Where are you from? What were you like as a kid? Only child, siblings? Give a kind of starter story for Michelle.
Sure. So I grew up outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, in Western PA, in a little town called Center Township. My dad worked in the mill and eventually became president of his steelworkers union. And my mom was an RN. She worked in the community hospital. She worked in the operating room, and the hospital served our whole community. I'm the oldest of four and the only girl, so three younger brothers. My nickname was Sis, which has stuck with me to this day. Anyone who is with me when I'm with my family, that's all they will hear is someone call me Sis. It took forever, I think, for my niece and nephew to realize that my real name was Michelle and not Aunt Sis.
That's funny. Go ahead.
I was just going to say my three younger brothers, two were college football coaches, and one has his own business. He's the CEO of Proline Builders. The two who were football coaches have passed away. So that's been, you know, something that we've had to endure for quite some time. And my youngest brother, Mike, he is married to a wonderful person, has my niece and nephew, and just my niece is at Duquesne University. She's a sophomore already, and my nephew's a junior in high school, and they are just delightful.
What do you, I'm sorry to hear about your brother's passing.
Thank you.
What do you remember as a kid as being, like, how would you describe yourself when you were younger?
Yeah, I think I was probably maybe the boss of the family, if you would ask my brother. The one in charge, the one always making sure they were staying in line, the one that I think my parents were the strictest with as well.
Firstborn,
mm-hmm. First girl, mm-hmm. All those first things. But I think, you know, that really made us a very close-knit family, very close to my siblings and to my parents and to our aunts and uncles and cousins. just a really wonderful, wonderful environment to grow up. But I think my brother would probably describe me as the boss of the family.
Do you remember as a kid thinking, you know, when I never like to say grow up because we're always growing and evolving, but you know, as you get older, like what types of things were you interested in, or did you have a career in mind when you were a kid as something that you aspired to do?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I was thinking about this, the first career that I could remember was wanting to be a teacher, really. I never wanted to be a nurse. I never had that sort of medical, don't like the blood and, you know, just don't like that environment. So I think my earliest memory was being a teacher and just really wanting to help people succeed and to grow into what they wanted to become and to really have that impact in the world as well.
What do you remember or what traits, and whether you got them from your parents or other people as a child, but what traits do you remember distinctly either feeling about yourself or learning that you've really carried through to today and has held true in who you are today and has really shaped you?
Yeah, I think hard work is definitely one of them. That is something that both of my parents instilled in all of us, that you were just not going to get anything for free. You really had to work hard and to be purposeful and intentional about what you wanted to do to be successful. That was definitely something that has carried forward throughout my entire career. Education is another one. You know, I don't think my dad ever wanted any of us to have the hard work life that he had. So he very much stressed education, going on to college, going further than that, making sure you had all of the skills and tools that you needed to be successful. So I would say, you know, hardworking, that intentionality, making sure your education comes first and your family comes first as well. That was very important in our environment, and also paying your dues too. So I think I always think about that when I talk to younger people. You know, you have to still have those qualities, and you have to still be willing to work hard and pay your dues before you can achieve that level of success. And sometimes that's not easy for people to hear.
How do you, let's stay on that topic a little bit, because I think it's an important one. I think it'll give some value to the audience also. How do you think about the balance of, and especially for people maybe earlier in their careers, the balance for them of paying their dues with not being taken advantage of, with being advocates for themselves? How do you kind of think of how all that fits together?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think you really need to be willing to understand your capabilities and understand when you need help and to ask for that help. You know, you will have mentors and sponsors and champions all throughout your career at different levels. People will come in and out of your career and will help you in different ways, but you've got to be open to that help. And you really need to be honest with yourself too in what your capabilities are. You know, you may think that you are the greatest at something, but you just have not put in that time and that experience yet. And that first time that you are, you know, sort of taken to task for something is not pleasant. So really, it's understanding where you are in that time in your life, and then looking around and seeing who is there to help you and who is there to give you the advice that you need, being willing to ask for that advice and to ask for that help and not pushing it away when it's offered to you.
I think you summed that up pretty much perfectly and very well. And I think it's such an important, I just think it's an important topic, is that advocacy balance with the humility of always being willing to learn and improve and evolve. So thanks for sharing your perspective on that.
Thank you.
Hal, so let's fast forward a little bit. Take us to college years. did you go to college? What did you study? What, if you did, you graduated and then went into what? Let's go to the early part of your career.
Yeah, I went to Indiana University of Pennsylvania, IUP for short, a state school in Pennsylvania. And my major was history because I thought, you know, that teacher thing, history, good degree to have, good background. But in the back of my mind, I was also thinking, maybe I want to go to law school. And I think that came from seeing my dad's experience being the president of his local union, seeing, you know, how people could be mistreated by their employer, you know, seeing what happens when strikes happen and just when things get messy between employees and employers. And I thought, you know, gosh, wouldn't it be great to help those people navigate those situations? So in college, I thought that that history degree would be beneficial either for teaching profession or going to law school. I graduated a semester early, so I had to find a job, and I was lucky enough to find a temporary role as a paralegal in the first law firm that I ever worked for, back then Kirkpatrick and Lockhart. These days, it's K&L Gates. What an experience. I think I knew from very early on that the lawyer track was not for me after working as that temporary paralegal. We were working on very large litigation cases, and it was paper intensive and time intensive. And you could see the stressful reactions and expressions on the lawyers' faces. And I thought, oh boy, I'm not ready to go down that road just yet.
What part of that? Was it all of that? I mean, was it the buried in paperwork? Was it the stress that came with it? It was both of those things?
It was all of that. It was, you know, the being on 24/7, right? Responding to your client request responsiveness is huge in any industry, but especially in the legal industry. And just, you know, just having to be there to do that hard work and to be available all the time to your clients. And if you were a younger associate, your clients were the partners in the law firm, but the same rules applied to you. So you were 24/7 available to those partners that you were working with. And that just, that did not appeal to me.
I think that whenever, for my business, I have an amazing attorney. And whenever I reach out to her, I always think like, oh, I know you're like you have a life outside of just being my attorney. And, you know, she's so fantastic that she responds all the time and is very punctual. And it's one of the reasons that I love her as an attorney. But I think about that quite often, is to your point, having to be on.
Yeah.
So you're a paralegal, you realize the lawyer route is not for you. Where do you go from there?
Well, I was fortunate enough, the partner that I was working for, who was a mentor, a sponsor, a champion for me, he saw, I think, a talent in me that I never realized that I had, and that was a talent for building relationships and for building really strong relationships. I moved from temporary to a permanent paralegal and was still working with him. We did a trial in Seattle, which was an amazing experience. He eventually moved on to be the hiring partner for the firm. So recruiting law students to work in the summer, recruiting recent law grads to be entry-level associates. And he saw that talent that I had to build those relationships and brought me along with him in this recruiting world that I never thought I would have an opportunity to be involved in. And it was really because of him who sponsored me and who championed me that I was able to move in that into that sort of professional world within the law firm. And he was just... He was wonderful. He was wonderful at building those relationships as well. And we really made a great team as we thought about this recruiting experience and what it looked like. How do we attract the best talent to the firm? How do we attract the best talent to Pittsburgh? How do we retain that talent as well? So we learned together, And we learn trial by fire in some ways as well. But I really, it was then that I found I had this knack for the human side of the profession. And I did go back and get my master's in human resources from St. Francis University, another local school in the Pennsylvania area. And it just really opened my eyes to the impact that we could have on someone's career and their life and just helping people become successful. And that's what I really, really enjoyed about that time in my career.
How do you go forward? I think about this all the time. I think about the ripple effects of everything that we do, and you know, whether it's somebody seeing something special or unique in you, or how you treat another person, and then they carry that with them on how they treat people, right? I think about the little actions that we all do that have ripple effects. How do, I have kind of a two-part question. How important is it for that advocate, that mentor early on in a career for you, right? And not this to play the sliding doors, like one path taken, one path not, but it sounds like that person in particular had, to paraphrase your words, kind of saw something in you that maybe you didn't see in yourself, which ended up setting you on this path down a career journey. How important is a mentor or an advocate early in your career? And what advice do you have for people that maybe don't have that? How do they find that? How do they seek it? How can they put themselves in a better position for success?
Yeah, it is so important, Lauren. And I think at every stage in our careers as well, it is so important, but especially when you are first starting out. I mean, you don't really know much about being a professional, you know, so I always looked for people that I thought were great role models and styles that I wanted to emulate, and then went and asked for their help. I always found that if you initiate that, that person is going to be much more receptive to helping you because you are interested in what he or she does, and you're interested in their style and how they've achieved their success. So you're quickly developing that bond right then and there. So I would tell folks just entering their professional career, don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to go to someone that you admire or that someone impresses you for whatever reason and engage. Be enthusiastic about what they do. Be engaged in the conversation. You will also be able to give back to that person as well, which is the cool thing about mentoring relationships and sponsor relationships, is that it is a two-way street. So you are learning as much from your mentee as your mentee is learning from you. But you've got to be open to it. And sometimes the most unlikely people will be the people that impact your life the most. So you've got to keep an open mind about those relationships. But you also have to be proactive and assertive enough to start building those relationships. And I would do it immediately. I mean, I in college, start talking to your professors and your counselors, you know, your internship supervisors. If you're doing an internship, start building that network, because that's going to last you throughout your career. And those are going to be the people that are going to help you get from one step to the next. Certainly is what happened to me.
So how do, the second part of my question on that, the DEI piece, how do you then, and you can answer this, I mean, obviously you can answer it however you want, but you can answer it by continuing to talk about your journey or jumping to it. But how do you get into the DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion type of work from where you started early in your career?
Yeah, well, it had always been part of my career. When I started, it didn't really kind of have a name. Right. But it was always something that we were thinking of, you know, how do we reach more people in our pipeline? How do we expand our pipeline? How do we get the widest pool of applicants possible for the roles that we have open? So it's always been part of it. it wasn't until recently that it was sort of named.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you, but thank you for saying that, because I think that's an important thing to, it's gotten more attention recently because named, but has always been important. So thank you for clarifying that.
Oh, you're so welcome. And it's something that I've thought about my whole entire career, moving from recruiting into professional development, which is sort of the training and development piece, the advancement piece for lawyers, and about giving lawyers the tools and resources that they need to succeed. I started then to think about, you know, equity and equality, and that sometimes that is not available depending on who you are and what your background was. So how do we level the playing field, right? How do we make all of the tools and resources available to everyone and give everyone the same chance at success? And that was the professional development part of my career. So understanding the role that training plays, understanding the role that performance evaluations, feedback, having really open and honest and transparent communications, that is where I was able to develop those skills and those resources for my toolkit. And once again, DE&I was part of that, right? Because we wanted to make sure that that access was available to all who came across the doorstep in our firm. But I think what really made it stick was thinking about the holistic approach, right? So starting from pre-offer to offer all the way to joining the firm, thinking about then that training and development and advancement piece. How do we understand what success means? It means something different to everyone. And then how do we give people the tools and the resources? Even if it meant going outside of the firm, that was okay. We still wanted to give people the advantage and the resources they needed to be successful, even if it wasn't within our firm at the time. And that's really, I think, in law firms where DE&I started to become named and started to really play a role in an intentional role in what we were doing.
Where do you think companies in general get it right or get it wrong when you're talking about DEI for attraction and retaining of talent?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think that goes back to just the open honesty, the transparency in communication, and really understanding what people want from you and then how you can help them achieve that success. And I think it's hard to have those conversations. Those are very difficult conversations to have. But the more we have them, the more beneficial they are and the more value and impact we will be able to have inside our organizations. But you also have to be willing to accept the fallout that might come with it as well. And that is, you know, maybe people will leave your organization. Maybe you will have uncovered policies and practices that are biased. And then you've got to think through all of those steps to how to make that better.
Let's shift gears here a little bit. I'd like to talk about some of your nonprofit work. So yeah, share a little bit about some of the things that you've done over the years or types of organizations that you're involved in and kind of what drew you to those.
Yeah. I moved to Nashville in 2016 to work in the DE&I space. And that really gave me such access to the community that it was amazing. And I always think about things as far as information, awareness, education, and access. So how are we providing information? And in this case, specifically, what it means or what it looks like to be in a career in the legal industry, whether you're a lawyer or a business professional with inside a firm. And then how do we bring that awareness and the education piece? So are we doing career panels? Are we mentoring? Are we doing internships? You know, what are we doing to make that come alive especially for underrepresented populations who think that they might want to go in this career? And then how do we give people access? You know, and that is, once again, those mentoring opportunities, those internship opportunities, access to the lawyers and the business professionals. Through all of that work at our firm, I was able to identify a few nonprofits that it has just been delightful to work with. One of those is Jazz Empowers, and I am the current board president for Jazz Empowers. And for Jazz Empowers, we go into underserved schools in 5 cities, and we bring jazz programs to those underserved schools. And it's so cool. You know, we really try and transform the lives of students in those schools through jazz education. Mm-hmm. And we try and help close achievement and opportunity gaps in music education for those schools. Our current statistics, we are in 290 schools in Nashville, New York City, New Orleans, Chicago, and LA. And
wow, major cities.
Yeah. And we're serving about 6,200 students within those schools. We've got an 86% retention rate of our schools from year to year, which is really great. And we are it just warms my heart to see what we're doing through Jazz Empowers. It's just an amazing organization.
I love that. You know, I've 2 kids and we live in Maryland, and some of the funding debates over the past couple of years have been, you know, the arts are the things that typically get cut from funding or reduced time. And I think it's just such an important, not only outlet for kids in general, but also to really bring, like, you know, like a lot of kids can shine in that area that maybe don't shine in other areas academically, or maybe just don't have access to those types of opportunities. So I think the arts is such an important area for, you know, for kids to have access to. So that's fantastic what you guys are doing there.
Thank you. I agree tremendously. And, you know, we've got some statistics that we like to share as well. You know, we've seen that participation in music increases college entrance exams scores by 16%, GPAs by 15%, and also graduation rates by 51%. So music education is definitely playing a role in successful graduations, going on to college, and being successful afterwards as well. But you're so right. It's the funding, too, that we have to make sure is in place for these arts programs to be successful as well.
That's fantastic. How do, what's the website for that? Do you know off the top of your head? If not, we'll link it up.
Yeah. If you just look at Jazz Empowers, you will find it.
Okay. Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll link that up in the show notes too. So.
Oh, that's great. Another group that I find amazing is Advancing Women in Nashville, AWIN for short. I am on the board of that organization, and we're really trying to advance and develop women as business and community leaders here in Middle Tennessee. We've got a roster of 38 companies representing all industries, and we really are working to influence workplace and also to advance leaders and to advance change within our workplaces as well. So another just amazing organization, really working, both work in the DE&I space too, right? Mm-hmm. Because we're working in Advancing Women in Nashville with gender, and then of course with Jazz Empowers with underserved and underrepresented schools and populations.
How did you first get involved working, and you might have touched on this a little bit earlier, but getting involved in nonprofit work, and how has that do you feel like that was a calling for you, a natural progression, and how has that shaped you maybe in the corporate world?
Yeah, a calling. I love that, because now that you're making me think about that, I think it was really a calling to do work in this space as well. I never thought about it like that, but that's a perfect way to describe it. And it started within my former firm and thinking about our talent pipeline. So how do we look really earlier in someone's education journey? So how are we looking at high school students who might be interested in a legal career? How do we identify those students? And then how do we follow them through high school, through college, through law school, eventually hoping to land on our doorstep, but to really put talented professionals into the legal community and understanding that it is a future forward way of thinking. So that's what really got me started, and being able to work with students who were just so bright, and then connecting them to people within my network, whether it was attorneys in the firm or career services professionals in colleges, in law schools, you know, making sure that people were aware of these really smart, personable, bright students much earlier in their career, and helping to give them that extra impact that they need to make it through high school, to make it through college, and to make it through law school. And we're seeing that now. You know, we're seeing some of our students who are graduating college right now. Some are already in law school. Some are in their second year of law school and are working in big firms in Boston and New York City. And it's just so exciting to know that we had a small hand in helping propel that person to be successful.
I can see it on your, I can see it on your face, the joy that it brings you, and knowing, to your point, that there is a you know, a small role that was played in that, and really affecting people's lives. So I can see the enthusiasm come through in you. That's fantastic. It's the best. It's the best feeling.
It really is, and it really goes back to those people that helped me early on in my career too. You know, that partner in my first firm, my CEO, when I worked at Steptoe & Johnson, one of the very first female CEOs at a major law firm. And I knew the moment that I met her that I wanted to work for her. If I was lucky enough to get that job offer, I was coming to work for her. And what an impact she made on my life, and continues to make too on my life as well. And when I think back to my parents and always, you know, saying work hard, give back, make sure you pay it forward to others, like people who helped you, you need to help others achieve their success as well.
I love that. It's so true. It's so true. Yeah. What advice would you give your younger self?
Oh, good question. Gosh, I would tell myself, don't be so hard on yourself. You know, you belong, you are capable, you are strong, you deserve to be there. Don't let that imposter syndrome get in the way too much. We all have it. We all deal with it. I still deal with it to this day, probably will always deal with it. But we deserve to be there, and we deserve to be in that room and have a seat at the table. But you also have to work hard to get there too. And you have to own your mistakes. So anytime you make a mistake, just be forward about it. And mistakes can always be corrected. And just take responsibility, take ownership for your own career. Think about those things that you want to do, how you're going to get there, and who's going to help you get there. And really think about what your purpose is too.
Do you remember a time earlier in your career, or any point in your career, but do you have any time specifically that comes to mind, like a distinct moment where something clicked, or you learned something, or you said, I'm not going to do that again, or I am going to do that again because it worked. But something that kind of learned, that you learned or ended up that you carried with you down the, you know, down the road career-wise.
Yeah, and that probably is owning your owning the mistakes that you've made. Very early on in my recruiting career, and this was a long time ago. So we were still writing letters to students as opposed to emails and texts and things like that. We had done some on-campus recruiting at a law school, and you know, you meet with a lot of people and you can't invite everyone back. So a handful of people would be invited back. Most people would not. So you would send two different letters to those two different groups. Well, I switched my groups and I said, hey, we'd love to have you come back for an invitation to the people who are not coming back to get an invitation. And didn't realize it until I started to get a lot of phone calls to schedule interviews. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to be fired. What is going to happen? And my hiring partner, that same person who was my mentor and sponsor, said, take ownership. And I did. I called each one of those students. I reached out to each one of those students. I explained my mistake. I was so sorry and so embarrassed for what happened. But I had to learn that lesson, and I had to take ownership, and I had to have all of those feelings and emotions that come with that as well. And I never made a mistake like that.
Again.
Ever again. proofreading.
It's funny. One of my, this is going back maybe like 2 years ago, but one of my employees made a mistake. It was a pretty big one. I mean, it cost us ended up costing us some dollars. But she was a great employee, and you know, it was an honest mistake. We all make them, right?
Yep.
But you know, she was being I was not happy about it. But she ended up, you know, we talked it out, and she you know, she said, you know, I wasn't sure if you're gonna fire me or something. And literally, and I said this to her, we have a great relationship, and I said to her, like, what? You're more valuable to the company now, because I bet you'll never make that mistake again. Somebody fresh in might still make that mistake, but I know that you went through the pain of it. So, and I certainly have my fair share of things like that. So I love that story, because I think it's true. And I think on the other side of it, for your mentor, you know, when you're kind of partner there, being able to give you grace to, like, okay, you messed up, own it, fix it as best you can, remedy it. But, you know, not holding it over your head and allowing you to learn from it is also really important.
Yeah, so important. I you know, I think if he was a different person, or, you know, a different kind of person, my career would have taken a much different trajectory if he didn't give me that grace. And I guess that would be another thing, too, just to, you know, make sure you give grace and that you take grace when it's given to you as well. I think that's another very important part of our professional journeys. And sometimes that's hard to do in the moment, to either give it or receive it, because you're so caught up in what's happening. But to be able to take a step back and to really give that grace and forgiveness is important as well, because we all make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
How would you, actually, I've one more question, and then I'm going to go to rapid fire. But before I get there, is there anything else that you want to cover that we haven't talked about yet?
I don't think so. You know, I think it's really, I loved our conversation about mentors and sponsors and champions, and just to really be on the lookout for those at all stages of your career. That was a really great conversation. And no, I don't think so. I think we covered pretty much everything.
How would you, so my final question for you, how would you define success?
Oh, wow. Great question. I think success for me is doing something that I am really excited about, that I am enthusiastic about, and that I can engage in, and also being able to have that impact on someone else. Maybe going back to wanting to be a teacher all those years ago, but how can I provide a value to you, and how can I help you be successful? And it all goes back to really understanding what your true purpose is, and all of those, you know, actions and those meanings behind your actions. But for me, success would be just that impact that I've made on others in their career paths.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful.
Thank you.
I'm going to switch to rapid fire. This has nothing to do with anything that we've talked about so far. So
okay.
Just top of mind, whatever comes. I don't know. I think there's maybe six questions here or so. And before I do this, actually, I'm going to want to make sure that I link it up. I'm going to link up Jazmin Powers. And also, I'm sorry, you said it earlier, but remind me the other nonprofit that you're involved with.
Advancing Women in Nashville.
Advancing Women in Nashville. AWIN, that's what it was. All right. Okay. Perfect. All right, sun or moon?
Ooh, sun.
Grass or sky?
Sky.
Astronaut or deep sea diver?
Oh, astronaut, because I will tell you, my first birthday was the day man landed on the moon.
Oh, yeah?
Fantastic. So astronaut, yeah.
That's a good memory.
How about that?
East Coast or West Coast?
Oh, how about middle PA? Or Western PA?
Apple or Android?
Apple.
And hike a trail or ski a mountain?
Hike a trail.
And my last, this was not on here, but now that I know that you're from Pennsylvania, so does that make you a Steelers fan? Because I'm a Baltimore gal, so we'll still be friendly.
Okay, yeah, we can be friends. That's okay.
You guys got the best of us last weekend anyway, so.
Yes. Well, we weren't expecting that at all, so it was a pleasant surprise for the Steeler Nation.
yeah. Well, is growing up where you are, I mean, I would imagine that part of Pennsylvania, and especially with your brothers being into football, I mean, were you guys a pretty serious football house, Steelers house?
For sure, yes. All three of my brothers played college ball. Like I said, the two were college football coaches in Ohio. My youngest brother is his junior high school football coach. And then my nephew is starting center for our high school football team. So it has carried through the generations.
There we go. Well, best of luck to your team the rest of the season, except when you play us. But...
same to you, Lauren, as well, except when you play us.
Oh, Michelle, I really enjoyed this conversation. I love your energy. It comes through the camera, and I think will come through to our audience also. So I really enjoyed talking with you.
Oh, I did too, Lauren. Thank you so much. And thank you for doing these. This is great. And the women that you have showcased have been so impressive. And like I said, I've taken a little bit from each one. So thank you for doing this and putting this out there.
I love it. It's such a pleasure, and have the opportunity to, you know, to talk with people like you and hear your stories. It's I'm the lucky one in it. So everyone, again, my guest is Michelle Bendekovic, and this is the Lauren Asghari podcast, and we will see you next time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thank you.
Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.